Dear friends, let me simply start by thanking you all for a magnificent celebration of the 100th session of the International Labour Conference. And I think that we can all be happy and proud of the decisions and the orientations we have taken in this session. Monsieur le Président, je vous suis très reconnaissant pour votre leadership et pour la diligence calme que vous avez manifestée dans la conduite de cette conférence. Votre réputation de personne de dialogue et de consensus vous avez bien sûr précédé. Et nous avons eu l'occasion de vérifier à nouveau ces qualités qui vous honorent. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président. Merci beaucoup aussi pour la conduction du bureau. And I wish to thank the Vice Presidents of this conference, Embajador Hernández Sánchez, Señor Lima Godoy, el Señor Osu, and say what an important role the Bureau played in this particular conference, and also congratulate them for the speeches they have just made, which I think go to the heart of our problems from their different perspectives. I am also especially thankful to Daniel Funes de Rioja, Chairperson of the Employers Group, Sir Roy Trotman, Chairperson of the Workers Group, and Mr. Major from Hungary, Chairperson of the Government Group. And permit me to continue thanking, because I think that when things work out well, we have to acknowledge that a lot of people were involved in this. The head of the selection committee, Mr. Shamir, the head of the credentials committee, Mr. Vokuma, the head of the financial committee, Mr. Greg Vines, the head of the application of standards committee, Mr. Pakshao Pardo, the head of the domestic workers committee, Mr. Kaddak, the head of the labor administration committee, Ms. Kwan, the committee for the recurrent discussion of social protection, Ambassador Jean Feider. Dear friends, the 100th session of the International Labour Conference is truly historic. I would say not only because it's the anniversary, but also because of the outcomes. The committee work, the external opinions we heard on these panels here, the visits of major leaders and your own discussions of my report on a new era of social justice, they're all showing us the way forward and the way to the future. Let me begin by your technical committees. You have produced outstanding results, and tripartism has again operated full steam. It produced these great achievements. Again, we have practiced our values and our methods. Let me just highlight the work of labor administration, this pillar of inclusive labor markets, the important role of the social protection discussion, linked to the reinforcement of Convention 102, access and expansion, and all the issues that are around there, and the fact that the notion of a social protection floor has gained foothold, and we will be moving forward with this idea towards the future. The ILO again shows that it can open new ideas, new ground, and put consistently on the table new areas of common agreement, of common understanding. I want to thank, in the case of the Technical Committee and the Social Protection Committee, also the people from the staff, Giuseppe Casali, and Hassan Diop, and Michel, who are there. But let me take a little bit of time on domestic workers. I think that we all felt the emotion yesterday at the moment in which this convention was approved. And it wasn't just that we were simply happy because this has happened. I think that we all felt that the ILO, with its convention system that is so geared to the formal economy, was able to reach out and to be sensitive and available for a demand that was there coming from people who said, look, we do not have protection. You have not been looking at us, you know, because it's more difficult to look at the informal sector. And I think that the pancarte that we saw falling down, the number of leaders of domestic worker organizations to whom I have to pay homage, because it's been their fight, their struggle, their capacity to not let us forget that we had the obligation to do what we did in this session, what we did yesterday, and what we have just ratified with the President. So an honor goes to them, because they kept the issue alive. It also goes to us in the following sense. In this session, we have shown something that I believe is essential for the durability of this institution, but also to its relevance, that we can go and address the issues of the informal economy, and at the same time, we go to the other extreme and we receive six leaders of very important countries. And it's both things that the ILO has to do. The one without the type of political support that we receive runs the risk of simply turning around ourselves. The political support, sound the capacity, without the capacity of having our feet strongly implanted in the reality of life at work, is not going to be lasting in terms of political relevance. It's the combination of both. And we have all been very happy that the ILO has been invited to the G20. But I would like to highlight that maybe more important is the fact that important leaders of the G20 come to the ILO and feel that it is important to speak from the ILO to the world. On this occasion, Chancellor Merkel and Prime Minister Putin and the President of Indonesia. A couple of years ago, it was President Sarkozy or President Lula. So there is this aspect also, which I want to highlight. Presidents come to the ILO because we are asked by them to be pertinent, to push forward, to think, to debate, to analyze, and because the problems are of such a nature that increasingly the world is understanding that this tripartite voice of the ILO, with its difference and complexities and all the elements that need to come together, has a fundamental role to play in preparing a better future. And I think that we live those two experiences. The capacity to have a convention that connects with people, and the capacity to have the political support that tells us that we have a particular responsibility as we move forward in the world. So thank you for what you've done, because I think that the three technical committees played a major role in advancing this. And I have to say another thing. When I saw the leaders of domestic workers' organizations and unions, what came to my mind is that this is not the only time that we have done this. I recall when we approved Convention 182 on child labor, some of you may have been here, but we had the World March for Child Labor walking down this aisle, coming to thank us for the same thing. Thank you for reminding that child labor exists. Thank you for acknowledging that this informal economy work needs to be acknowledged. And then if we go a bit far, it also came to my mind, our Convention 169 with indigenous people, which happens to be the flag that indigenous people all over the world have as a recognition of their identity, of their status, and the rights that they have acquired long, long, long before other people arrived to those territories. So why do I recall this? It's simply to say, if we are celebrating a moment in the ILO history, which is a 100th session, we have also to remember that the things that we're doing today we have done in the past. And if the things that we're doing today we have done in the past, we have the obligation to prepare ourselves to do them in the future. And this is the essence of my report to you. It is to say, well, what now? What comes next? Where do we move? And it has one dimension of saying the world has a problem, and the world has a problem that we need to address. That problem is called inequality. That problem comes from a type of growth pattern that is not sustainable, and that we, because we are tripartite, have to see what is the manner in which we transform a growth that has not been enough in terms of what we believe is needed into the type of growth that is going to bring down the social tensions. I want to thank the words of Vice President Lima Godoy on this issue, because he highlighted something that is essential for us here. We cannot think about social justice in the future outside of the way the markets work. The whole sense of what we need to do is to give markets a different outcome. And if we're going to give markets a different outcome, we're going to have to give sustainable enterprises of the real economy the space as they need in order to create jobs. And we're not going to have decent work if we don't have work. And we're not going to have work if we don't have, you know, the enterprises that produce those jobs. What's the problem? I won't go further into this, but it's the type of challenge we have in front of us. The way the world economy is organized today, the financial system is privileged over the real economy. And because of its level of profits, captures so much of the resources that the level of real investment has been stable for some time, except in the last 10 years, in which there's a difference between the developed and the developing countries. I want to recall this because part of what the leaders that came here said is, look, you need to discuss, you need to debate, you need to think, you know. You need to look at the world and see how is it that your vision of those things permit us to find new solutions, and I think that this is very much what we need to do. Let me also say that we had a lot of external voices here sitting, and you know, I'm highlighting a number of heads of state that came. We also had, you know, four former heads of state present with us here, which I would like to highlight: President Obasanjo, President El-Niri Prime Minister El-Niri of Yemen, President Kufuor, Prime Minister Win Kok. When I met with them, I said, look, why? What is our interest in the relationship with you? You have been candidates, you have made campaign promises, you have then been heads of state or prime ministers, have you realized how difficult some of those campaign promises, how difficult it was to keep them? Am I right or wrong? They said, you're right, okay. Our interest and our relationship with you is to understand the blockages. What happens when you have to govern? Where are the blockages? Why is it that you say we're going to create so many million jobs and then you can't? You know, what is your own experiences as people who have exercised power in order to help us define the way in we can address these policies so that we can use your experience and to put it in terms of the types of policies that we propose? I think that their presence here, I think, was extremely, extremely important. Let me also add another thing. The Applications Committee did its job. The Budget Committee did its job. And in relation to the Applications Committee, let me mention one thing. I am extremely worried with the situation in Bahrain. You know, the security of trade union leaders, the reinstatement of displaced workers, and the need to reinforce social dialogue. And as in other similar situations in other countries of the world, I think that I personally, the ILO as a whole, have a particular responsibility to be very watchful. Another word on the budget. Thank you for all of those that gave such a large majority. We have a basic understanding to continue our efforts to achieve greater efficiency and cost effectiveness. But I also want to thank those that could not join us. And why do I thank those that could not join us? Because they went out of their way to make the point and to make a distinction between their support to the ILO and the fact that because of their budgetary policies or their budgetary situations, they could not accompany. And I thank them for that. I can understand that countries have policies, but I can also want to accept publicly the support that you have given to the ILO, and thank you very much for that. I was saying that we had been accompanied by external voices. I think that, let me mention two things. One was the panel we had on the Arab youth, and I want to talk about our work next year on youth employment. I think we saw one of the ladies, the lady from Yemen, here in the short snapshot of the conference we had. You know, the strength, the conviction, the capacity to explain why these things had happened in Egypt, why they were happening in Yemen, why they had happened in Tunis, why they're happening not only there but in a number of other places is something that we certainly need to take into account. And I think that he gave us, again, a touch of real life. You know, we had a young Egyptian lady that was in Tahrir Square. We had a Yemeni leader that was not yet a successful process but was in the middle of the struggle in Yemen. I think that this is the type of thing that the ILO has to be attentive to, that we have to be able to be sensitive to all of that. You know that we have been very close to all that is happening in the Arab world. And the other thing is to say, we had a finance minister here who has had a historical linkage to the ILO, and he said something very simple. Fiscal policy is an instrument of social justice. Now, a finance minister in those conditions that tells us that fiscal policy is an instrument of social justice is not out in advance in the analysis of all of these questions. So the question is, what now? I've already mentioned the presence of what the heads of state were telling us, and I think that part of it was going towards the contribution that the ILO can make in terms of policy coherence. And I'm happy that we will be able to move forward on that. But I think that we have a key voice, again. And the president of Switzerland said it very clearly. You know, because of your tripartite constitution, you have a contribution to make to the world the manner in which these international organizations work together. Let me finalize by two things. First, to thank you for the support that you have given to the report of a new era of social justice. Yes, I believe that we need, and you have so expressed it, a new pattern of efficient growth that will open the way to a new era of social justice. So thank you for the overwhelming support and the very encouraging comments. But let me also say thank you to some of you who are critics, because we also have to respect the fact that some of these things may be seen differently, and this is part of what the ILO is about, is to be able to put together what a majority feels with those that may feel, you know, with this aspect or that one, that needs to be refined. I talked to many of you. You illustrated many instances in which this was a true agenda for your own countries, and I want to stimulate you again to take this debate home, to see to what extent you can use the tripartism as a point of departure for a national conversation, I would say. These are obviously issues in which there are profound structures that come from the way the economies are working, in which there are interests that are there, but in which, unless we're able to find national ways and global ways in which we change this direction, it's going to be very difficult. And here I want to again mention the significance that I see in social dialogue. I mentioned in my opening address, yes, social dialogue here in Geneva is great, and we've made it work extremely well this year. But the test of what we stand for is social dialogue at home. And there is one thing that I think is essential in thinking about all of this, that there are many things that happen in our country that have to do with the way the world is going, and that we can explain that for external reasons we have problems in our country, not least the fact that we had a financial crisis in which most countries of the world had nothing to do with it, and that most people in the world were not responsible for it. But why do I highlight this? Because social dialogue depends exclusively on us. There's no country in the world that can say we can't have social dialogue because there are some external forces. It depends on us. It depends on the will that we have at the national level to want to make it work. And I have to stimulate you in that direction because it is such an incredible tool to stabilize society, and it is such a loss when we decide not to use it. So I think that the ILO issues are issues that are at the heart of what we can discuss together on all of these questions. Let me also look towards the future. And in looking towards the future, I have two things in mind. Next year we will address the issue of rights at work. I'm looking at next year's conference. And in the last 15 years, including at this session, we have advanced regularly in our standard setting and supervisory functions. nowhere more so than with the historical adoption of the Maritime Labour Convention in 2006 and the Domestic Workers Convention of this year, but many others that we have approved in the past. And they are, of course, essential to the effectiveness of our organization. But some are worried that for the future, the tripartite convictions and consensus may be faltering. We should not simply allow such doubts to persist, and it is an issue we must address head on. The fundamentals of our special identity is our tripartite nature and our standard-setting responsibility. To move forward, we need to have strong consensus and purpose, and we cannot falter in this essential mandate. So my suggestion to you would be, let's use next year's discussion on the recurrent item on fundamental principles and rights at work to address this question head on. Neither weakening this function nor a distancing of some constituents from it can serve the organization. A good open discussion in the traditional ILO tripartite way to clarify the way forward, I think, would be very important, and we should prepare ourselves well for that discussion. Particularly so when we have just proven with the Convention on Domestic Workers that we are up to the task. So it's not that we can't do it, but let's put the doubts aside and ensure that we have a clear passage towards the future on standard setting. If there was a place in my conversation with you today to recall the role that Sir Roy Trotman has played in this organization, I think that this is the place. Sir Roy, I will make some comments also on record in our meeting of the governing body in the afternoon, but here let me say to just to highlight your notable contribution throughout the ages, and you were the best one to explain at each stage what you had done. Your style, your elegance, your conviction, and the manner when you meshed the three things so extraordinarily well. In the key thing that I think that you've said today, the contribution that you brought to the spirit of consensus building in the governing body, and which I have to say personally I observed with extreme efficacy. So thank you so much, Sir Roy. You have made an extraordinary contribution to this institution. As I say, I will say more in our meeting of the governing body. And continuing with next year, we will also address youth unemployment. If one thing is clear from your discussions, it is that youth employment is at the heart of everybody's concern. More than concerns, I would say it's disquiet, even anger, if you're a young person or the parent of a young person. So I think that we must already think that we must make the next year discussion a true global summit. The global summit of all those engaged in governments, enterprises, workers, youth organizations, international organizations, and others who can, in fact, contribute to the solution. After what we have heard at this session, I feel we have the responsibility to transform next year's International Labour Conference into the convening institution of global decision-making on policies and actions that we can put at the service of others. It's a question of simply, in a certain way, doing for the question of youth employment what we did vis-à-vis the crisis with the Global Jobs Pact. It is perfectly feasible to do it, but we need to be able to convene, you know, be able to converge with lots of different actors to actually produce the type of results that we need on youth employment. So, dear friends, let me finish. There's obviously lots of work to do towards the future, but I think that you can be satisfied with what you did at this conference. I believe that future delegates will probably look back and say it was at the 100th session where the roots of the new social era of the new era of social justice started to emerge on the basis of the 2008 Declaration on Social Justice, where the dignity of domestic workers was upheld, when the new notion of a social protection floor took hold, when we were told once again by important world leaders that our voice, values, and actions were needed for a more stable world. I have to say that I'm extremely proud of this conference, of what you have done. I feel energized, and we have a lot of work to do. And in the process of getting to the end, I realized that I skipped a part of my speech. So permit me to go back to it. But it happens to be, for me, a very important part. The part that I skipped is the following. I wish to recognize the professionalism of ILO staff servicing this conference and begin with a quote. And I'm going to quote the closing words of the Secretary General of a previous International Labour Conference. And he said the following. The staff was drawn from a number of different nationalities, and all of them have worked very long hours and with great enthusiasm because they realized that they were assisting in a great movement, and that upon their work, its success must to some extent depend. Now, these were words pronounced in 1919 at the first ILO conference, which was held in Washington, D.C., and they were spoken by Alberto Mas, the first director of the ILO. And I can't imagine, you know, a better description of the role of staff, because so it has been for 100 sessions. And I would like, you know, before we end, to simply ask you if we could all together applaud the staff that have served you during this conference. But then there is also another applause, and the applause is that I want to applaud you. I want to applaud you because nothing that happened in this conference happened by accident. You made it happen. You know, and we are proud when the domestic workers are there saying thank you. And we are proud when we defend Convention 102 and the idea of a new social protection floor, when we reinforce, you know, what has to do with labor inspection. We are proud. We're proud of having done those things, not because we believe the work is ended, but we believe that we've done a good work. But that good work was done by you. And I have the responsibility as Director General to say thank you. Thank you because at this conference, which was very historic, which was very important, which had the significance that it had, you made things happen that justify the proudness of having an institution that had 100 sessions. So let me finish simply by thanking you and by applauding you. Thank you so much.